This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Talk about immigration or controlling population growth, and get ready to dodge the bricks tossed your way. Our next guest is no stranger to controversy. He started out in the 1970s New Mexico working with conservation groups, seeing that movement kind of fail. At the start of the Reagan presidency, Dave Foreman and friends founded the group symbolizing radical green action. They called it Earth First. Foreman published Eco Defense, a field guide to monkey wrenching. In 1990, Dave had a brush with the FBI about an Arizona power line, but he was never directly involved. Since then, Foreman co-founded the Wildlands Project and wrote the book Rewilding North America, a vision for conservation in the 21st century. Dave Foreman, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to get a chance to finally meet you, at least a little bit on the telephone. You know, as the Grateful Dead would say, what a long, strange trip it's been. Are we still somehow on the same road we began with on Earth Day in 1970?
I really think that Earth Day 1970 has been overplayed. The conservation that I'm really a part of, wilderness and wildlife, had its beginnings much earlier and really was quite little affected by Earth Day. I think Earth Day led more to a lot of excitement about environmentalism, which I differentiate from conservation, and controlling pollution, making cities more livable, and that sort of thing. And in that way, it did a heck of a lot of good. But I think it's a little different than, at least in the United States, than the conservation movement was.
Well, who are the earlier writers in the conservation movement that you would identify with then?
Well, you can go back to Henry David Thoreau and John Muir. Others like Aldo Leopold, Ernest Thompson Seton, Olaus Murray, Bob Marshall, others like that. They were most interested in how to protect the fading away wild places in North America, and also the fading away wildlife. In the 19th century, we had seen the horrible events of the extinction of the passenger pigeon, which ranged from Florida to Ontario and was the most abundant bird on Earth. And in 20 years after the United States Civil War, the passenger pigeon was extinct in the wild. It had been overhunted and its habitat had been cut down. And that was quite a shock. The same thing nearly happened to the bison on the U.S. and Canadian prairies, with some 50 million bison being slaughtered in the 1860s, 1870s, and 1880s, to where there were fewer than 1,000 bison left in Canada and the United States by 1890. And those two things really launched the conservation movement, along with the heavy logging that had gone on in the eastern United States and other exploitation of the land.
Well, speaking of John Muir, in 1997, you were on the board of directors of the Sierra Club. Why did you leave?
I left in part because I was frustrated with the Sierra Club turning its back on the population issue. That in 1989, the Sierra Club, I thought, had taken a very respectful and solid position on population freezing in the United States, recognizing that most of the population growth in the United States was now coming from immigration, and called for immigration to be balanced, that there would be no more immigration allowed in the United States from any source that was more than what we were losing in people going to other countries. In other words, it was an effort to keep the United States the same population it was. And this was not just a position of the Sierra Club, the Wilderness Society, Audubon Society, and others pretty much had the same position. But in the early 1990s, more politically correct type folks became involved in the population committee of the Sierra Club and other groups, and they decided that it was wrong to really restrict immigration. population in any way. And so that old policy was thrown out, and with it, I felt, was the only way to manage population growth in the United States.
Well, I just did a program about this book of essays on population called Life on the Brink, Environmentalists Confront Overpopulation. Yeah, you have a good essay in there.
Yes, and I have my own book called Man Swarm and the Killing of Wildlife on Overpopulation.
And after we did the program, we got some email and blog comments, not all of them complimentary. For example, Brandy was disappointed I raised the immigration issue at all. She thinks humans are the same all over the world, so what does it matter if some of them move around? What would be your response?
Well, the fact is that people don't have the same impact all over the world. And in fact, folks from the United States and Canada have a much greater impact than people anywhere else because of our wasteful lifestyles and our energy waste and all that. And the research from a number of reputable sources show that when people come to the United States or to Canada, their consumption and their overall impact goes up. Also, for example, it was shown for quite a while that immigrants to the United States from Latin America, the women were actually having a higher birth rate in the United States than those who had stayed behind in Mexico and Central America and other countries. And so it's not the same all over the world. And I think that if the United States and Canada can't manage population growth, then how can we talk to other countries about the need to manage population growth? And then finally, by the United States and Canada allowing high immigration rates, we act sort of as the safety valve on a pressure cooker, where places like Honduras have an incredible population growth rate, can send their excess population, which just encourages them not to do anything about trying to control their population growth. And there's nothing at all among responsible immigration management advocates that is against immigrants as people or against any kind of group of people in the world. It's simply a recognition that we have to take some responsibility for the population growth in our countries.
Well, what immigration solutions do you offer in your book, Man Swarm and the Killing of Wildlife?
In many ways, the United States receives many immigrants from Mexico, which is a country I've spent quite a bit of time in and have many friends in. I've done conservation work down there in cooperation with my friends there. But I think we've created a mess in Mexico through the North American Free Trade Agreement, which harmed Mexican agriculture very badly. To the extent that Mexican farmers growing corn or chickens cannot compete with the subsidized corn and chickens coming into Mexico from the United States. And so we don't just have poor campesinos thinking about moving to the United States. We have fairly prosperous middle class and upper middle class farm owners and managers and chicken production companies and that type of thing being knocked out of jobs and thinking about coming to the United States. So I think we need to change NAFTA, first of all, so that Mexico can compete much better with the United States and Canada insofar as key crops like chicken and corn goes. In fact, I would say it's to our best interest, as well as to the best interests of Mexico, for Mexico to be able to outcompete the United States in the production of chickens and corn, at least in Mexico, if not for export. I mean, what we need to be doing is trying to get Mexico on its feet so it's a middle-class, middle-income country. The other big thing we can do is that our sort of chowder-headed war on drugs has created a social breakdown and a legal breakdown in Mexico, where Mexico is very unsafe now. It's a very dangerous place. even though I've traveled there widely in the past, I haven't been there for several years. It's just too risky. And we have done that through the excess of our war on drugs. And so I think the best thing that can be done there and to deal with the takeover of Mexico by narco traffickers is for marijuana and cocaine to be decriminalized in the United States, to be regulated, to be taxed, which would probably do away with our budget difficulties, and for Mexico to do the same. And that would break the back of the narco cartels. It would allow Mexico to become much more stable and prosperous and law-abiding.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with the famous green activist Dave Foreman. Well, Dave, it's great you and I are talking about this with a few hundred thousand comfortable folks listening on radios and iPhones. But the reality on the ground in Africa and Asia, it doesn't give a damn about us. People in the West, where the current population is aging or maybe heading for decline, if you don't count immigration, we just don't see it that African countries are young and they're doubling their population within a lifetime. Maybe we'll get another billion people in China and India. Can we do anything that matters on the international scale?
Well, I think we can, and one thing is to get back to family planning. Family planning just sort of lost its cachet, and part of the reason was the opposition of the Catholic Church to abortion, which became opposition to any kind of family planning, or even pretending that there was a population problem. It also was possibly caused by the feminist movement, where instead of supporting a woman's right to family planning, they switched to support a woman's right to have as many children as she wanted. And so, in many ways, family planning also became politically incorrect. And I think those of us who love the wild world and love quality of life need to get back together with the family planning movement. I wish Gates and other wealthy folks were putting their money into family planning. I think any aid that goes to countries in Africa or Asia for health care should be tied to family planning. I would like to see every woman in Africa have access to family planning in such a way that her thug of a boyfriend or husband doesn't even have to know about it. Because right now, many women want to have fewer children, but are forced into having more children by the man in their lives. We've seen some countries like Thailand successfully control its population through family planning, whereas the Philippines, that originally had the same population as Thailand, is going through the roof because of the opposition of the Catholic Church to family planning. We saw China take a rather extreme step of limiting births to one per family, and China says that without having done that, there would be 500 million more people in China, half a billion, whereas India, that was not able to get any kind of handle on family planning or population stabilization, is shooting through the skies and is going to pass China as the most populous country in the world. But if we look at the estimates coming out of the United Nations, they're just outlandish. If folks are old enough to remember when Ethiopia had a famine in the 1980s, they had 40 million people. Today, they're up to something like 76 million people. By 2050, they're supposed to be over 150 million people. How on earth is that possible? It's just not possible. And it's going to lead to the terrible suffering and development defects in millions of children. And so do-gooders need to think a little more about what their do-gooding is due, because in many cases, I think it leads to more people suffering more horribly in the future.
Well, Dave, I suffer from a kind of population denial that I think is common enough. We doubt that these new swarms of humans will really arrive because some catastrophe will stop it. Maybe a new plague or nuclear war will save us from ourselves. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that's inevitable. I don't think Ethiopia in any way can get to 150 million people. I don't think Nigeria and Africa in any way can get to 350 million. I don't see how the Philippines can support 150 million people. It's just not going to happen, and it's going to be very awful. People are going to suffer, and we are going to see the suffering and the misery on television. And it's going to be a plague. It's going to be starvation. Climate change is one of the things that is sort of the joker in the deck as far as world agriculture goes. The loss of water, the whole green revolution, was built on fossil fuels, fertilizer, and energy to pump water or build dams. Right now in India, 150 million people are dependent on one aquifer for irrigation, and that aquifer is just about to go dry. And so what happens to 150 million people then? We're going to be seeing things like this, worse famines and other crises than we've ever seen. And it's because the world as a whole, and particularly the comfortable nations like Canada and the United States, would not take responsibility or forethought to deal with these problems.
And, of course, we don't have to look to Africa for that. Look at the drought that's happening in the United States, right in the best crop-growing regions, and even where you live, you were saying.
Well, yeah. And I live in New Mexico, which is pretty low rainfall here where I live. In Albuquerque, we average about 10 inches a year. But last year, we only got 5 inches. And that is creating a real problem. But if we have in the U.S. Great Plains, the Canadian Great Plains, the greatest wheat and soybean and corn growing region in the world, suffering from drought and excess heat, which leads to a real collapse in the amount of food available for export to hungry countries, what are the ramifications of that? And I think we're going to see more of that because we refuse to believe in global climate change or climate weirding, as I'd rather call it, and the strange things that are going to happen. We just aren't being responsible. We aren't looking to the future, and we are going to pay the cost of that. And unfortunately, the people who are probably going to pay the cost first are the poor people of the rest of the world. But then who is really paying the cost is all the other earthlings, the non-humans out there that we always forget about when we talk about overpopulation or climate change. And we are right now causing a mass extinction, unlike anything seen since the dinosaurs became extinct from a meteor or asteroid hitting Earth.
Well, that's huge, and I know that people just talk about humans and forget about the other species as though they don't have a right to be here, and we do believe they do. I wanted to ask you, too, about Europe. Like, there is a problem. This has been politicized, and the people that are talking about immigration and population to some degree in Europe are the far right to some degree, and you may have some Republican listeners who agree with you about controlling immigration in the United States. How do you feel about that politicization of what is really just a basic fact of life here on Earth?
Well, it is, though I think, you know, frankly, and this is probably going to upset some people, it's not something I really talk about, but I think in Europe there truly is a social problem, where in many European countries now, it's illegal to say anything that might insult somebody else's religion. I think, thank God, in the United States, we have a Bill of Rights and freedom of speech. There are countries in Europe talking about letting Sharia Islamic law be established in parts of their country. Why is it that every other culture in the world has the right to advance itself and be proud of itself and stand up for it, whereas European culture somehow is not supposed to do that? Why does Europe need to become this sort of place for Islamic takeover? I think there's a real problem there, and it's unfortunate that so many people refuse to look at it and that it has become the province of right-wing sort of nativist type of political parties in Europe. because it's a much bigger issue than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's always hard to see around the next bend in the road, but I'm wondering, what are you working on, Dave Foreman? Where do you see yourself going?
Well, I'm 66 years old. I just had neck surgery, which was a great success, and I've been pretty well crippled and labeled to backpack or anything for 10 years, and I feel better now than I have in 10 years. And I plan to be in better shape at 70 than I was at 55. And so I'm going to be doing a lot more canoeing in the Canadian and the Alaskan Arctic, where I love to be chased by musk oxen and that sort of thing. And I'm going to be giving a lot more talks, traveling around. I'm working on several other books right now. And the key thing I want to do is try to get people to pay attention to the real issues. And I also want to encourage conservationists to stay strong, to recognize that our number one task is protected areas, that we need more national parks, biosphere reserves, wildlife refuges, and that sort of thing, particularly in Canada, which right now holds some of the greatest biodiversity in the world, but seems to have a third world mentality about exploiting natural resources, whether it's tar sands or boreal forests or building dams in Quebec or more diamond mines in Northwest Territories or what have you. Canadians really need to stand up, because Canada right now is a treasure of the entire world. And Canada, which has this wonderful reputation as a progressive, civilized country, is engaging in some of the most uncivilized 19th century resource exploitation we see in the world today.
Oh, I know. We've got to move right now to make Vancouver the biggest coal port in North America. Oh boy, we're going to be number one in climate killing. Well, as we wrap up, Dave Foreman, do you have a website, a blog, or a Facebook page to recommend for people who want to find out about you?
My little nonprofit organization, the Rewilding Institute, can be found at rewilding.org. And there you can see my various books that we offer. You can see where I'm going to be speaking in the future. I'd love to come back and give talks in Canada. I've been to Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Toronto, places like that, and I'd like to do more if Canada would let me in after the nasty things I've just said.
Well, I hope so, and I'm hoping the United States lets me back in after many of the things that I've said. Our guest is Dave Foreman. He co-founded Earth First. He's a lifetime advocate for the wild, a contributor to the new population book Life on the Brink, and author of Man Swarm, The Killing of Wildlife. Keep in touch with Dave at rewilding.org. Thank you, Dave. It's been good to finally talk with you.
Oh, it's great to talk to you, and I'll be happy to be on your program any other time.
Thank you. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.